Well, welcome to an episode of the Grovecast, a podcast by the pastors of Cedar Grove for the people of Cedar Grove. This is Barry, of course, and Cale to my right.
Howdy.
And Jason right across the table.
Hello.
Wired up and ready to go for us today. So we're gonna tackle a topic, and right away, as soon as I say the title of the topic, I'm going to have to do a disclaimer. And the title of what we're going to tackle for the next couple, 3 weeks is Things That Men Need to Know. Now, my disclaimer is this. Women, you can still listen. And you can actually listen from two or three different angles. Number one, if you're married to a man, you're going to be interested in hearing some of the things that we're talking about and trying to encourage our men to know. Might want to be a little careful about how you frame that to your husband. Might just invite them to listen to the podcast with us in that fashion. But also, if you're raising a son, I think it would be something that there'd be some value there.
This is assuming they read the title and begin listening to this in the first place.
Right, right. That's always the thing. And then, of course, if you're raising a daughter who you hope someday will marry a man, it's some things and qualities that you'll want your daughter to understand and what they're looking for in a man. So ladies, we want to invite you to go ahead and tune in. We're not going to unveil any top secret dark things that only men can hear and know, anything like that. But we are going to get into some things that just as a pastor, as a former teacher, that where I've observed and see men struggle in their lives. And part of my heart, really a very large part of my heart, my ministry, is how do I do a better job of helping men grow in their lives? So I really appreciate Cale and Jason coming in, as always, and kind of helping and fill in some of the things. And I'm going to ask them some specific questions here in just a little bit about this particular topic. So There are two or three things, and let me just set it up as quickly as I can so we can get into some of the specifics. So as a teacher, I saw a lot of young men struggle, just not interested in school, struggling with drugs. I've watched young men struggle with relationships, whether that be their relationship with God, their relationship with girls, or their relationship with other guys. Mm-hmm. A stat that blew me away, and I didn't hear that until I came to Cedar Grove. That was associate pastor at that time, and we were listening to a series that said 1 out of 3 men have no or a poor relationship with their father. And that one was kind of an eye-opener for me. And the part that made it really eye-opening is at the time there were about 30 or 40 men involved in this particular study, and that stat held true. For that 30 or 40 men, many of them said, yeah, I didn't know my father, didn't have a relationship with my father. I don't talk to my father. So that was a really big deal. And that's been, I don't know, 20 years ago. Well, maybe not quite that long, I guess. Maybe 15 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I also have watched how many men struggle, not just in their marriages, relationship with their wives, but friendships. Mm-hmm. They just don't have good solid friends in that. And so over the years, I've just kind of been working on this thing. What do men need to know? What are the things that men are missing? And how do we help communicate to them on that? So that is a big part of where my heart is. And so we're going to go down this road for a little while and see where it takes us. All right, so guys, I want to start it out this way. There are three kind of things. Some of this will be informational, and some of the things that men need to know is just some new information. But a lot of this also has to do with attitudes and such. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to start today with just kind of a general demeanor or attitude toward life. And some of this will be, it's all spiritually based. I mean, you can't talk about this stuff without the spiritual aspect becoming forefront. But at first glance, some people just tuning in might not hear a bunch of spiritual things at the beginning, and I think that's okay, but we're obviously going to be dealing with that. But here's the statement I'll throw out here. It says, if you're not growing, you're dying. If you're not learning something new, it means you're digressing. And I have in mind learning new information, learning new skills, meeting new people, just learning new things. And one of the things I see in so many men, they just don't seem to have any desire to learn anything new or to grow, or they become one-dimensional in their growth. They only learn about or grow in one area. They don't grow in other areas that are going to be important. So
you're telling me people are bad at trying new things.
Trying new things. Yeah, we kind of get stuck in ruts. And it's not just that. It's just the attitude that I see in some men. It's like, you can't tell me anything. I don't need to know anything more. Mm. I know what I need to know.
Yeah, I have enough for right now.
Mm-hmm. And that attitude is just a sure sign of failure in some area of your life. I mean, so and one of the struggles is a lot of the guys that have that attitude cannot see it in themselves. Mm. And so this is going to be a call to really look deep in yourself and understand. But we're also going to be talking about it if you're trying to help a young man or help a man, how do we draw them out of that attitude? And so we'll get into that, probably not in this episode. All right, so Jason, I want to start with you. Just give us a couple examples. And I can ask Jason this because I know some of the things he does. But give me an example, Jason, of some of the things that you're learning that you consider important for you to grow either as a person, as a worship leader, something like that. So just give me some specific examples.
Yeah, well, that's a lot.
Yeah, you don't have to tell us the whole thing, just a little bit.
So I guess like one way is to start like within my reading. I try to read regularly. I kind of hate to start off that way because then it's like, oh, I'm off, I don't want to read. But but I'll just say the things that you can be exposed to. And so I do read, like, you know, books on worship, but I try to spread it out. And one type of book that I try to regularly read, put into my rotation, I do have this weird rotation of reading so that I don't just read one thing, I forgot what I call the category, but like kind of self-discipline, but some of them are like just staying like a lot of them are leadership. Like I'll read stuff about leadership, but sometimes it'll be something about, you know, being like godly manhood. It can be all kinds of, you know, mental health stuff. You know, I'll try to read those things. I would say like another major thing is just, you know, I decided a long time ago, I just felt like I really struggled with like having mentors. And there was a place in my life where I had nothing close to me. I just didn't have like the ability to just have, you know, someone mentor me. But I was able to find mentors from far away, either like through conferences, just knowing the type of men that, you know, I aspired to be like. Now you do have to, you know, I'll go ahead and give the caveat. You do have to be careful because no one is Jesus Christ. Everyone is fallible.
That's right.
So you don't look at them as like the ultimate model. People like, you know, I'll just throw out the name Bob Coughlin from Sovereign Grace Music, because he just actively mentors worship leaders. But there's a lot, or even, you know, like one, I reconnected with a few people like Dr. Joe Kreider's at Southwestern Seminary now, and I kind of reconnected with him because I've known him all my life, but he moved away, and so I got in touch with him, and there's just a few other people that, you know, just partly just so that I could observe, partly so I could bounce questions off of, because I think that that's an important part, is, you know, just first of all, not just learning through books and through far away, but surrounding yourself with positive models. And that can be done at any age. And I'm not even necessarily saying, you know, like, I think we, like, people that are younger, I'm not necessarily younger to everybody, but look to someone of older age. I used to go to a church that was just, like, basically all young people, and partly, I don't think we were necessarily trying to do that, but there were a lot of mistakes that we made that kind of forced that issue. And I think that there was some pride in that we didn't really, like, there was no cause for concern that we weren't multi-generational. Mm-hmm. We were just like 20 to 30 and our pastor was 40, and maybe there was a few others, but it was mainly that. And, then I, you know, ending up at a church, that I didn't necessarily want to go to. I'm not talking about this church. I didn't necessarily saw it as a type of church I would go to, but it was like very multi-generational, a lot of families, and how much I was able to like lean on elders and mentors. And I just want to share, like, this is a great verse. Really all of like 1 Peter 5 kind of like spells out all this, but verse 5, it says, "Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you." Now he's talking to everyone, young and old, "with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you."
Yeah. And so which passage was that again?
That's 1 Peter 5, 5 to 6. But read the whole context.
Yeah.
Let me unpack two or three things. Number one, it's interesting your last comment about being in a church younger. I actually have talked to a pastor from Chicago. It's been several years ago. But they actually took the approach of, they told the older people either get on board or get out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they literally wanted the older people to leave. Wow. Because we just want to do younger stuff for church. And that broke my heart. I'd be really curious. I've never had any follow-up on that, so I don't know whatever happened. But let me unpack a couple other things you said, Jason. Number one, you talked about a rotation of your books. Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with the idea of that rotation?
Probably my own madness. you know, like my brain, like, organizes things in certain ways, and then in other ways it's total chaos. And I think it's like kind of like having like a Netflix queue for books. Like, it's just like, yeah, I don't know, I like to categorize things, and then it just helps me, because like, even like, there's so many subjects, like biblical subjects, that you can read about. Mm-hmm. And it can be very hard. I mean, you're not gonna cover it all, but I just was like, you know, like a book on like prayer is important, so I want to read a book on prayer. And I could read 5 books on prayer, or I could kind of like be a little bit more rounded and then like read a book on the Holy Spirit, or just on, you know, the history of the canon. And I wanted to read, you know, secular, you know, nonfiction and fiction and that stuff. So it was just in order to be able to be more well-rounded. And then the thing is, like, hey, I could read every one of Tim Keller's books, or I could, you know, I read a Tim Keller book, and then the next book I read is from some, you know, J.I. Packer, you know, just someone else, so that I, you know, because that's, like I said, it's dangerous, because Tim Keller is fallible. And so while I recommend all his books, I haven't read them all, but, you know, I think he's a great person to look to.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's just one person, and God reveals himself to different people in different ways. Not saying that the truth is different, but their approach may be different. And I think that's such a great, helpful thing.
Yeah, their approach, their style, those types of things.
Yeah, and all that, you know, your different categories of books, the different styles of books that you're reading, the different authors, the different subjects, that all feeds right into what Barry was saying about not growing in a one-dimensional way. Right. Mm-hmm. Even though we're just talking about the narrow subject of reading books, you're still growing in a lot of, you know, you're branching out in different directions.
Yeah.
You know, with your different styles, different genres, whatever.
And you don't have to like everything. You can, you know, like part of that is saying is it kind of can give you discernment for like, you know, you can read book and you one book and you can say, well, that wasn't for me. Or you can also say that's, you know, that's no good. And you just move on, you know.
And, you know, I saw. OK, so I was watching a video about reading books, which is kind of funny, the other day. But he was saying some advice that he gives is you don't have to read an entire book. You know, if only one or two chapters even interest you, just read those and then say, hey, you know, I read, you know, this was good for me. This was helpful. I'm not really interested in the rest of the book, or I, you know, I kind of know enough, or I don't have the time to read that and I want to move on to something else.
Yeah.
You can call it good. Maybe you can come back to it later. Maybe not.
Yeah. I can't remember who, like, and I'm not going to get the quote right about read, like nothing worse than like reading a bad book. And like, if you're, you know, really, especially after even a chapter, if you're not feeling it, then move on. Because books are a lot of work. Like, you know, my only goal is to read 10 pages a day, and that will get you through, you know, a 200-page book, because, you know, it's like give or take some pages.
Right.
Usually a 200-page book I get in 2 weeks. And so, you know, two books a month. That's good. Because really 10 pages is like, you know, once you're doing it, it's like nothing, you know.
Yeah.
But once you're like on a roll, it's really very little commitment.
Yeah, if you make the time for that, you block that out. You know, and I saw a quote from Dr. Owen Strand. It was a tweet. He said, life is too short to sing bad theology. And so how much more does that work with, you know, reading bad books? It's like, why waste your time?
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of times, like Jason said, some books, once you read the first two or three chapters, you kind of have gleaned the theme or the idea, and sometimes that's all you're after. But that's what, one of the things separates the good books, though, that hook you all the way to the end. You feel like you're gaining new information and insight.
Right.
And one of the things, how do you evaluate a good book, bad book? When you guys read a book, you go, man, that was really good. What's your evaluators or keys in that? What do you think about?
I've
never really thought about what you think.
Yeah, sometimes, you know what, I really love good writing. Like, even when it's an academic book, there's ways to make it come to life. You know, like, when someone uses, like colorful language. I think that you can do that in academics. And so that's like one thing that if there's like a writer like that, then I'm just like, you know, just love it. Like, and I think J.I. Packer, he's pretty good. I can't really, you know, like, C.S. Lewis, of course, like he's such a good writer that a lot of his like, theology stuff, really, he's just able to bring that to life.
Yeah. And he's not the most academic, but he is a really good writer.
Yeah.
And he has some really good thoughts.
But of course, you know, sometimes I will plug through an academic book because it's so helpful.
Yeah. What about Holiness of God? Is that R.C. Sproul?
Mm-hmm.
That is a wonderful book, in my opinion. I thought that was a good one. I don't know if you guys have ever
I haven't read it.
It's convicting.
So tell me why, though.
Well,
without telling me the whole book.
What
made it a good book for you?
Okay, so Holiness of God by R.C. Sproul is basically a systematic theology, kind of like a very short, you know, it goes through the Bible. It's like a short Bible study just talking about God's holiness, God's perfection and his purity. And his, you know, apartness.
Okay, but
his language that he uses, especially in the beginning of the book, he has this chapter that's just describing the scene and the feeling that Isaiah would get standing in the throne room of God.
Okay.
And it's like, it makes you sweat.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
See, this is the thing, is where I have read R.C. Sproul. So, and that's part, like, I can say, yeah, I remember, like, I forgot what the title of the book was, but it was just very, like, consumable, you know, like, kind of like, it doesn't feel like, you can write in a way that doesn't, where it just doesn't even feel like work to read. It's just, you know, just leaping off the page. And
yeah,
and coming into your soul. And I think he's, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Now, some of you remember from the last podcast when we were doing Theology of the Family, one of the little illustrations I think we brought up was the 5-foot shelf thing.
Yeah.
And so this fits well for this. Whether, in other words, as a man, you need to figure out what your 5-foot shelf is. You need to start figuring out what are some of those topics, as Jason said, different areas that you want to have books expose yourself to. From Kale's point of view as a family minister, parents, what books do you want on your children's bookshelves? And so that all is part of this growing. Both of you, when you were growing up as kids, did you read? Did your parents read? Did you have books in your home? That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That was a major thing for all of us, and that desire that's built in learning. And so, so one of the big things for me for young men is just developing, strengthening that desire to keep growing, keep learning. It doesn't have to be one particular topic. Go ahead. You were getting ready. So I was just a couple days ago, went home. My younger son was home for lunch. He loves hunting, and he was watching a hunting show. So I sat down, and I'm not a big hunter. All right. So, I mean, I know a little bit about it, a little bit. So he's watching this hunting show, and I can't remember, but the Drury family, and I know you guys are big hunters, so I'm sure you know who the Drurys are. And maybe a couple of our listeners will, I don't know. But I watched that thing for 5 minutes, and I'm going, oh my goodness. Because they have made this family, Mark Drury, I think, is the key guy, but have made a science out of food plots, farming, coupled with hunting techniques, processes. They've developed phone apps for hunters and people putting their food plots together. They weather conditions, barometric pressure, food types.
Oh my word.
Unbelievable. And I asked Miles, I said, what in the world? I said, is this for real? He said, these guys have the largest, some of the best success of any hunter in the market. He said, there's nobody else like these guys. But what really catches you is how passionate they are. Now, some cynics will say, well, they're just making lots of money off of it. Yeah, they probably are. But you could tell they have learned over the years. In other words, they had this great desire. Yeah, we love to hunt. How do we make it better? How do we make it more exciting? How do we make it more consistent? How do we make it more sustainable? And by asking these questions, they've developed things. I mean, you would think you were watching a science show to hear them talk. So it was quite amazing. And I thought, man, and then there was another element in that I thought was really interesting about how it crossed the generations. In other words, it was a son, grandson, grandfather. It was a wife. They had in the episode I saw, their 87, I think she was 87-year-old grandmother shot her third deer. She just started hunting in her 80s, and she was involved in the process. So it was a family connection, and you could just see that bond. But I thought, what a model, though, for men on learning and growing and developing.
Yeah, passing that wisdom.
Passing that wisdom on. There was so much in that I thought was just fascinating.
Yeah.
In an area that you wouldn't think. And when men find something they can be passionate about and want to grow, it's really exciting. But here's the problem with so many men. They just get passionate about one topic, and then other relationships suffer, other things in their life suffer, and they get stagnant in those areas. But that's what I felt like I sensed with the Drurys. Yeah, it's about hunting. It's all about that. But yet, relationships, family, marriage, kids, all that was a part of that process. And my goodness, what an example for men to understand what it means to grow, learn, and transmit to other people, teach other young men those things. I don't know. It just caught me off guard because I couldn't believe
it.
So
It's one of the things that came to mind, and this might be something that we might hit more in another session about, like, I mean, this more deals with just like fatherhood, but being a man, is that, yeah, the fact that we get so focused on one thing, that we have trouble. I mean, I would say just not even father, son, that we have trouble relating when this, like, you know, either someone else does not share that passion, mm-hmm. or, you know, just finding common ground when there's any kind of difference, even when there's like a different sport team, it can be, I mean, as a Cubs fan, it can be a little like hard to connect.
You're not saying we ostracize you because you're a Cubs fan, dude.
No, although it, yeah. It can get a little, like, heated.
Yeah.
Now, he's not talking about between Kale and Jason and I.
No. No. But just, you know, like, I think that, like, you know, fathers can be, and I don't even, not all the time, like, sometimes it's just that, like, if their son is not interested in the same things, right. You know, whether it's, like, you know, just the obvious, you know, kind of cliche example is like a father that, you know, plays football and then the son is not interested in football. It can be like either disappointing or just, you know, that they just don't take an interest, or, you know, or just the father is, you know, the workaholic father, where he, you know, just does not, doesn't go to, son's, whatever activities, and so just the importance of being present, and I'm not just saying about, you know, your son's thing, but just in even at church, just being present. You know, it's okay that you know, you don't care about the same things, but taking time to listen and just being present is just so important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm learning about those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking the interest to be able to, again, learn something new.
Yeah.
Kale, what, before we came on, you were talking about kind of an off the wall thing. You're talking about learning new things and such. Yeah. And I do, before we quit, I do want to touch on that just a little bit, because I think there's something about you. So go ahead and share that.
In, you know, talking about raising young men and father-son relationships, you know, it's super important to foster and cultivate those relationships, obviously. And you know, there's such a lack of those relationships now. And, you know, you said those stats about, you know, 1 in 3 men had a poor or no relationship with their father. I'd be interested to see what that is now, if it's even less, you know, like 1 in 5 or something.
No, yeah.
Because that was 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested to see what that is now that we've had another
generation. Actually, it would be, if it's worse, it'd be like 1 in 2. And there was 33.
Oh, right.
Yeah, 33. See, that's the math teacher in me coming out to help teach you something new.
Exactly. About math. See, I don't share your passion in math. Right, exactly.
Very few people do, yeah.
Well, but you do round me out. You know, I'm around that a lot more now. But no, but what I was saying was, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, father-son time, you know, bonding time. It doesn't always have to be super exciting. And actually, one thing that could be really good, in my opinion, is just taking them along on the quote-unquote boring trips or the boring things, you know, run them on errands, you know, take your kids to the DMV or something, you know, which is the, you know, everybody kind of jokes about it being the worst. Or, you know, go to the tax office at the counter, or go to the bank with them, and not just take them there, but like, don't let them check out either. I know, I would go with my dad, to some work things and like meetings and stuff even. And dude, I was not there. I had my phone or my Game Boy, and I was checked out.
That's exactly entirely what I had when I was a kid at meetings. Yeah.
Well, you had.
I'm saying that sarcastically. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No Game Boys when I was your age.
Well, yeah, that was what I was doing. I was not involved at all. But you know, if you, and you don't have to make your kids do something, but if you, you know, don't let them just check out right away. At least if they start getting really bored and really rambunctious or whatever, then that's fine. But you know, whenever you first get there, you try to have them talk to some people. You know, give them something to hand to the clerk at the bank counter or something. Be like, hey, you know, we're making a deposit or something. Goes to the bank
counter. Right. So part of what you're talking about is the idea that as a young dad, young man now, you're having to learn these things. You're having to do these things for yourself, for real.
Yeah, yeah. And that's my issues. I have great parents, and I love them. And they taught me a whole lot of stuff. But there's still a lot of things that I missed out on, I think, because I don't know how to do a lot of things now that I'm an adult. You know, Sage and I bought a house last year. No idea what I'm doing still.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's where a lot of parents didn't know what they were doing when they bought their house and stuff too. And that's where the guys that know that kind of stuff, you know, you can be a resource person. Where does the young man who didn't have a father, doesn't have that relationship with his father, where does he go and get help in those kinds of situations? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've noticed about men, and partly because I notice it myself, is when I don't know how to do something, there is a tendency to freeze up, tendency to just to avoid it. Mm-hmm. There are the things that I know how to do. I'm not afraid to get in there and tackle. But the things that I've never done, that I'm going to have to do, there's this, I have to work up to it.
Yeah.
And I think this is something I see in spouses because the whole, you know, the joke about the to-do list, the honey-do list and things like that. A lot of men struggle with the honey-do list because they're just not comfortable. And how do you do that? Just using a hammer and screwdriver is not easy for everybody. Doesn't mean they're bad men. It's just they don't have the experience, the interest, and so it's difficult.
They didn't grow up
around it.
Those things, yeah.
And even if they did, there's some guys that grew up around it but just don't like it.
Yeah.
And so that creates friction in a marriage then, or in a situation, because the husband can't get over that being locked up, for better word, mm-hmm. of just the fear of getting into doing something new.
Yeah, I think we just hit on something big, which is, and it's partly, it's just cultural, where we don't like to be bad at things, and we don't understand the idea of like failure as a way to learn. And so, you know, and it's, I'll admit it, I don't like, you know, I don't want to do something that I'm bad at. Mm-hmm. But you kind of have to be bad before you get good.
You start there, yeah.
You know, like people will be like, I don't know how you, a lot of people's, you know, just kind of starting out playing guitar, and they're like, well, I cannot sing and play guitar at the same time. I don't know how you do it. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, I just kept trying and trying and trying.
Yeah.
And then finally something clicked and I could do it. And, you know, I do it all the time. So it's, you know, now it's like nothing. But, yeah, I remember doing that and being like, this is like, this, my brain doesn't work this way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm not musical at all. And I've played guitar just a little bit in my life. And it took me several years before I could sing and play at the same time. And I still am not good at it at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes time.
Yeah, even just, you know, being in front of a crowd. I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to, like, I don't want to, you know, this might be something to hit on. It's just like, I don't want to ever speak in church or you know, I can't be in front of a crowd. Well, yeah, just, you know, I tell people, well, like if they're singing a solo, if it's someone new, I coach them, I'm like, you know, the worst thing to do is freak out because you're nervous. You'll be nervous. Mm-hmm. You know, I still get nervous sometimes.
Sure.
And it's just dealing with those nerves. And, you know, and even, you know, with speaking, it's so unnatural for me. But, you know, the more I do it, the more it, you know, it just kind of, I don't think about it as much of like, hey, I'm on stage talking to people. And even like when we started live streaming, all of a sudden I was just like so aware of that. And it just like, I mean, I'm sure there was like some nerves with that, just cause it's just like, now I'm like, people can go back and see this and it's there forever. But yeah, it's just, it's repetition And so that's something, as, you know, as men, we need to, you know, going back to humbleness, is like not being afraid to not being good at something, not being the expert on something, and being humble enough to take part in that.
Mm-hmm. So first one, got to learn, got to grow, got to keep growing, absolutely. Desire to grow. And the men who have the desire to grow are the men who are just more successful in life. Mm-hmm. I've just seen that evidenced in my little small sample size of the men I've been in contact with and watched. Men that I've read about and such have a desire to grow in their relationships, grow with God. Now, what we're going to do in the next couple of episodes, we'll look at a couple of more ideas like that, you know, the desire to grow. But also we're going to talk about what are some other specifics, what is some information we need to know, what are some specific examples of things that we need to know. And then one final thing, and this is kind of part of a lot of where I am as a pastor, is how do men learn to get better at passing this on? How do we teach other men? How do we encourage other men to change? The famous man's prayer in the Red Green Show, which some of you, if you've never seen it, won't make as much sense, but they finish their men's meeting with the man's prayer. I'm a man, I can change. If I have to, I guess. And it's basically the idea. Men know they need to change, but they just don't really want to. And how do we change the want to? Where we desire, we want to change.
Yeah. And how do we do that without?
We want to grow.
Without looking like a fool.
Yeah.
That's what we're worried about.
Right. We got to keep up our appearances on that. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here on this particular episode. Next time, then, we'll get into a little bit more and more specifics. There's a lot. We could probably do 20 episodes on this, as far as I'm concerned, but we're going to keep it to 3 for now, and then we'll go from there. What are you learning, guys? How are you growing? What are you growing in? That's your question for today. All right. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Growthcast.